Does it get any better than Chicago food? From longtime favorites to newly opened locations, Italian beef joints to pizza places, burritos to sushi, Chicago's very own Eats celebrates a wide range of food and restaurants in the greater Chicagoland area. Hosts Kevin Powell and Michael Piff welcome you into their daily food talk in the WGN Radio Break Room as they discuss their latest foodie adventures, their top five lists, the latest social media arguments, interviews with chefs, and conversations with local celebs about their favorite places to eat. This is Chicago's Very Own Eats.
Episode 3 of Chicago's Very Own Eats with me, Kevin Powell, alongside Mike Piff. It's been the first two episodes were fun. Getting some good feedback so far, Mike.
Yeah, very excited about the feedback coming back. And we love that people are chiming in, giving us recommendations. We've been putting our kind of like our question of the day or question of the week out there.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of fun responses for later in the episode today. But yeah, if you... You can find us on WGNRadio.com or Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
I'm a Spotify guy. Are you Spotify or Apple?
So I am more of an Apple when it comes to podcasts. I listen to my music on Spotify.
Okay. Coming up on this episode, we talk with Nick Kindlesberger. He's the Chicago Tribune food critic. Got lots of stuff to get to with Nick. It's Chicago Restaurant Week, which, you know, feels like we're coming out of the whole pandemic thing here, and I go to restaurants and people are in there and it just feels somewhat normal. So it's a good way to support local restaurants and you get a great deal. Typically the dinners are like anywhere from $39 to $55 for 3 to 5 courses. So a lot of really good deals out there to take advantage of Chicago Restaurant Week.
I mean, yeah, it's a great opportunity to try places that you probably wouldn't go to normally.
Yeah, and you get like reasonable deals on it and whatnot. So we'll get into all of that with Nick, and then he's got a couple of restaurant reviews. The Gordon Ramsay Burger Spot.
I keep hearing more about it.
So I walk past it just about every day, and I was like a little skeptical at first because that's where the Wahlburgers was, the Mark Wahlberg place, and it didn't work. And I was like, I don't know. But every night I walk past it, it's packed.
Yeah.
So I think I was underestimating the star power of Gordon Ramsay. But I mean, people
because Mark Wahlberg couldn't do it, huh?
I mean, they were just like basic burgers. This is a little bit more elevated than that. So I walk past the Ramsay Burger Spot and. It's full every night, so we'll get a review from Nick on that. He also went to Armitage Ale House, and just a quick glance of the interior of that place, and I'm like, I need to go there. It looks incredible. So we'll get a couple of reviews from Nick. We'll talk about Chicago Restaurant Week, and the Oscars are Sunday, so you and I thought it would be a fun way to talk about food
in films.
Food in films.
Yes.
So we'll take a deep dive into that. What are a couple quick ones that come to mind for you?
So a couple quick ones. One of my favorite movies, and I will play it whenever, you know, I come across it on Netflix or sometimes it's on Amazon, is the movie Chef.
Yep.
With Jon Favreau. And he makes the tastiest looking grilled cheese I've ever seen. And I've tried to replicate it myself. And so I, you know, what we'll do is we'll talk about some of the places that we recommend to get your fix after seeing a scene like that. Mm-hmm. So like in this case, Chef is about a guy who gets fired from a restaurant, starts a food truck, and then bonds with his son going across the country. So I was thinking about food trucks that sell amazing grilled cheese sandwiches.
Right.
And I think one that comes to mind for a lot of people is the Cheesy's truck.
Yep.
You've seen that around a lot of festivals, things like that. They have an amazing sandwich called the Melt, another one called the Tenderizer that's got like, this is one of those like put too much on things, but somehow they make the flavors work. If you're a suburban person like I am, you'll see the Toasty Cheese Truck around at festivals and some of those, middle of summer festival for your town type thing, like Rotary Fest, things like that. Mm-hmm. That place will, that truck will incorporate duck bacon in their sandwiches. And I mean, when you think duck bacon, you think it sounds good?
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. And then in Naperville, I'll throw one out to the Naper Thrill. There's a place called Everdeen's that specializes in gourmet grilled cheeses. And one of my favorites there has, they call it the Sloppy Joan. So they put Sloppy Joe in a Texas toast grilled cheese sandwich.
Wow.
Now, so I'm already craving it now that I'm talking about
it. Yeah, that one will put a dent in you for sure. It's the cheesy food truck is fantastic. Daily Plaza used to do like almost a food truck. I don't know if festival would be the right
thing. Every Friday.
Was it every Friday?
Every Friday.
But it was great. They would all park in the Daly Plaza, and you could walk around and bounce from truck to truck and try a little bit of everything. And that's where I first tried it. We used to have more food trucks coming out pre-pandemic outside of our building quite often. Harold's Chicken would post up right in front of our building. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's another one we could do, food trucks down the road.
You know, pro tip for anybody that really wants to get in the food trucks, and I mentioned this because after I saw the movie Chef, I decided to spend an entire summer finding as many food trucks as possible.
How many did you get to?
30.
Wow.
Yeah. It was very fun. And I love that you brought up the Daly Plaza, what was like a wagon wheel of food trucks every Friday. And it was like eight different ones a lot of the times. So you'll notice I put up a blog a long time back about this, and most of the photos are taken at that Daly Plaza wagon wheel or just finding different festivals around the suburbs that have tons of these things.
I love it. So we'll get more into food in films coming up with Nick. Anything you want to point out? Did you eat anything good over the past since our last episode?
Yeah. So, you know, I've actually been cooking a lot more this week.
Nice.
And I made a stop at the nearby butcher that I love very much, the Wheaton Meat Company butcher. And just meat is different from a good butcher, right? And they have these burgers that, we got four of them, and they grill perfectly. You'll actually find at some restaurants in the Wheaton area, they'll say our burgers are from Wheaton Meat Company. So you get that taste. You'll know it's pretty good.
I love it. Yeah, this wasn't too crazy of a week for me, kind of a healthier week, but we did have...
Good for you, Kevin.
Well, I mean, healthy-ish.
Compared to last weekend, if you listened to our last episode.
It was bad. So, we did have... We got a bag of this at Trader Joe's, Argentinian red shrimp. And
go on.
Mixed it in with some orzo, and it was just a perfect dish. We're going to cook it again tonight. Argentinian red shrimp, I would describe it as this, as if shrimp and lobster had a baby. So it's red. It's got more of a red look to it, a little bit more plump, and it has a pinch of more of the lobster flavor. And it's so good. Again, we just get the bag at Trader Joe's, and you can mix that in with, you know, pasta dish or whatever. But we just mix a real simple sauce with some orzo, and it was just absolutely fantastic. It was so good. We're going to make it again tonight.
Yeah, I do need to shout out. We did pick up from our nearby golf course. We live right next to the Village Links of Glen Ellen.
Okay.
And they have a restaurant that's part of the course called the Reserve 22. And they have a chicken sandwich. It's like panko breaded with bacon. They use cream cheese on it. It's, oof. That's one that, like, I'm glad I don't go too often because I know I'll just get that every time.
I've been craving chicken parm, and we mentioned this on an earlier podcast, how much I love Club Lago's chicken parm. But I'm going to attempt to make some chicken parm at home over the weekend.
Okay.
And I've been scouting some. I've done it before. I do it in the cast iron, and it's really a fairly simple process. But the last time I did it, it was good but not great. So that's on tap this weekend, some homemade chicken parm. Get the chicken, the mozzarella, all that stuff. Tonight, we'll fire up the kitchen tomorrow night. So
send photos, Kev.
I definitely will. I'll be reporting back. Okay, this is episode 3 of the Chicago's Very Own Eats podcast. He's Mike Piff. I'm Kevin Powell. Here's our conversation with Nick Kindlesberger from the Chicago Tribune. Now joining us on the podcast, Nick Kindlesberger, the Chicago Tribune food critic. Joins us to get to a few different things. It's Chicago Restaurant Week. Nick's got a couple of fresh reviews, and then we're going to get into food in film, which I think is a fun topic. Nick, I appreciate you jumping on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Mike is curious how one becomes a food critic and your rise to success with the Chicago Tribune. How did
Mike. Nick, I need to hear your like origin story, really, because
my origin story. Okay,
yes, well, your origin story becoming
so
a food critic. It's a podcast.
Well,
you can go for as long as you want.
Okay, good. Yeah. I grew up in a really small town where food wasn't a very big deal. You know, a town of about 2,000 people in southern Indiana. And I graduated with a writing degree and decided to move to New York City. And then I'd never like lived in a big city before. And I was just astonished that you could get pizza on the corner that was better than any pizza I'd ever had in my life. And so I was just so inspired to get to just be around so much food and culture that I just kind of became obsessed with it and started writing first on my own and then for any publication that would have me. And so it's one of those things that I never said, like, my goal is to be the food critic for the Chicago Tribune. It's just sort of came along the way because I am apparently not smart enough to think of any other job that I'd like to do. I just like to eat food and then write about it.
I mean, that's an amazing gig. And now you can talk about it, too, and video and everything we've got now. Was there a moment when you were in New York after moving from your small town where you had not just like the pizza you mentioned, but like a full-blown meal in New York that was just completely eye-opening and you were like, oh, my God, I can't believe this exists?
Yeah, no, I mean, it felt like it was happening all the time. And one of our, let's see, this is a crazy story. One of my, I moved to New York with a friend from college, and we kind of got tapped into the sort of other people who had graduated and moved to New York. And one of them was like, you have to go visit Danielle, which is this super expensive, you know, prefix menu restaurant, you know, like $300 just to go there. And we had no money at all, but for some reason, the people were so excited that we were both kind of writing about food that they took us there. And I'd never experienced a meal like that with the wine pairings and all the different courses. And so even though I was really into like the street food that you could get in New York, the pizzas and the hot dogs, like I also had the sort of fine dining portion of it as well. So I like it all. I don't like to just stick to one thing, you know, like I think a lot of older food critics were just focused on what's the big expensive new restaurant downtown. But I like that too. I don't want to ignore those sort of things as well.
I think that's, I think that's just the one thing I love, like the way everybody approaches food now. And I think it's just it's become such a huge industry, not just the food industry, but talking about it, writing about it and all of that is that, you know, fine dining doesn't necessarily have the same stuffy feeling to it that maybe it did for many people growing up. It's like, oh, you know, white tablecloth, it's going to be stuffy and fancy and all this. And I feel like now people are like, yeah, you can get an amazing meal, a street food meal that's delicious. Or, yeah, you can go to a fine dining restaurant. And a lot of these places, you know, like I always mention Dusek's down in Pilsen, and Mike knows it's one of my favorite restaurants, where, like, that's some incredible food, but it doesn't have in any way a snobby feel to the restaurant at all.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I love, you know, Dusek's is great. I was just, you know, I went to a show right next there at, what is that called?
Yeah, Thalia Hall. It's great. You get a dinner. And
Thalia Hall, yeah. Yeah, you have dinner and then go there. It's great. Yeah, no, you're totally right. I think people are, like, adjusting to what is it we want? Do we want, like, just incredible service? Or, you know, we want service, but we also really care about the food. And so a lot of restaurants now are just focusing on that, which is just brilliant. And so, you know, when I moved to Chicago, like, 12 years ago, I was just completely astonished by the Mexican food that was just everywhere in Chicago. And so that's been sort of, I've just been obsessed with trying to visit as many like taquerias and Mexican restaurants as I can.
Well, yeah, actually I've noticed that on your Instagram, and I highly recommend our listeners go find you on Instagram because the photos on there are all mouthwatering. How much has social media kind of changed the game of being a food critic? You know, when I go through your handle, I'll actually see you kind of like rate something off of, well, it's not necessarily Red Hot Ranch, but it is pretty good.
Yeah, Red Hot Ranch is my like go-to sort of scale for like a burger, like just a straight up not fussy burger. It doesn't get much better than Red Hot Ranch. I love to show people that I'm out in the city eating, and so social media has been great with that. I don't want to, you know, like usually I don't take a lot of pictures of sort of the nicer sit down dinners that I'm doing because I just don't want the chef to know I'm there at the time. But I think that social media allows us all to see what's coming up, and you can't hide anything anymore behind like a good name because people will see like, oh yeah, that doesn't actually look that good. And so you know, it's a different time. There are some negatives, obviously, with social media that are kind of annoying, but it's definitely a part of everything we do now.
So, yeah, how has that evolved? Because, you know, critics, like, back in the day, like, wouldn't even, like, reveal their identity, right? They didn't want the restaurants to know they were going into the restaurant. You know, like Phil Vitale, I remember this was maybe 5 years ago. He's like, well, it's just time I just show my face. Like, it's you know, it's just where we're at right now with social media. But you're a food critic for a major newspaper. When you walk into a restaurant, like, what are you going in disguise? Like, how does this work now? Or do you just kind of approach it how, like, it doesn't matter? Like, it's fine if they know me. I should, you know, they shouldn't treat me any differently. What's your approach to that?
Well, it's all different. Like, you know, the pandemic just totally upended everything. So for a while, I was just like making reservations in my name because I had to show them my vaccine card. And like, they were going to figure it out anyway. And I didn't know what the legal ramifications of like making up a name and then having a vaccine card that didn't, you know, match that. And so now that that's over, I'm back to, I just make reservations in fake names or with a guest's name, like a friend's, and then I just kind of show up. You know, the majority of restaurants I go to have no idea what I look like, but the sort of higher-end ones would have known no matter what. So, you know, like Phil Vitale was anonymous for a long time, but if you went into certain fancy restaurants, they'd have a picture of him up in by the kitchen, being like, so it was an open secret that if you wanted to know what he looked like, you could find out. And if you were really that concerned about like knowing when he was being in, you could probably do that. It doesn't really matter as much anymore, I don't think, especially because things are so fragmented now. You could get a bad Yelp review, and that would be as devastating as, you know, if I came and reviewed a restaurant and didn't necessarily like it. So it's just a very strange time, and I try to never make a reservation in my name now that the vaccine mandate is over. And, you know, I should probably buy a bunch of wigs for my bald head, but we'll see if we get there, if I need to do something like that.
So, Nick, you're always trying new things, but are there places that you go back to just because you just need something comfortable or just a favorite that you'll do? Like, I mean, I'm bringing it back to Red Hot Ranch. Red Hot Ranch was just a place when I needed comfort food, I picked up that double cheeseburger because I needed that or those fries. So,
do you have
those places?
I have a couple. You know, my daughter, who's 8 years old, is not too keen on going to new restaurants all the time. She doesn't think it's that cool. So we do go to Red Hot Ranch just for, like, you know, hot dog and fries because that's one of her favorite places. And I live next to a restaurant called Flatten Point that I like to go to just because it's, you know, down the street a little bit. And I like the owner and chef because they're super nice and I never know what's going to be on the menu. But it is, the curse of the restaurant reviewer is that I always have to go someplace new. So I don't have a lot of immediate favorites.
It is a weird time, you know, and the restaurants, we all know how difficult it's been for them over the past couple of years, everything that everyone's had to go through, especially restaurants, mandates and this and that and all that. Is it, look, you're always going to give your honest opinion, but is it almost like a fine line where, like, you don't want to be overly critical or rip a restaurant? Because right now I think everyone just wants to see restaurants continue to grow and get back to normal. Again, I know you're going to give your honest opinion, but does that creep into like the back of your mind at all? Like, you don't want to completely destroy a restaurant in a review?
Oh yeah. No, I would feel terrible to have any kind of impact like that, especially right now. I've been honest about places that I've gone to and given sort of lower reviews, just sort of based off the food that I thought, you know, maybe you can find the dish like that exactly as good or better at another place and it's half the price or something, you know, but I have tried not to sort of take down anyone's business because I know that's kind of the livelihood of people. But then you start getting into like well, then what can you say? And then what's the point of reviewing restaurants at all if you can't say anything negative? And so it's a balancing act for sure. And I try to be fair and, you know, try to approach a restaurant, feel what it's like. I only get upset if I feel like they're intentionally trying to take money from people in sort of obvious ways. But, you know, it's all capitalist, so we have to make, you know, they have to make money. And so there's only so far that can go. So, there's all these different ways that you can approach it, and there's no sort of exactly one way that everything should be.
Well, you've got a couple of fresh reviews, and we'll start with one of them, which I walk past just about every single day, and it seems to always be full. You know, social media, if restaurants become Instagrammable, if you can take cool photos in or around them, I think that helps. And especially when you have a celebrity chef name attached to it, I'm sure that helps a little bit with the traffic. Well, I'm sure a lot with the traffic and the amount of people that are going there. But let's start with Gordon Ramsay's burger spot. I've yet to be, but it seems to always be full. What were your thoughts on the Ramsay's new spot?
Yeah, this was actually a restaurant that I was like, maybe I should like pan this restaurant because, you know, he's a celebrity chef that's putting his name on the restaurant, but like he's barely ever going to be there.
Yeah.
And so it's all based on this reputation. And as you know, I love Red Hot Ranch. I like burgers that are burgers. I don't want like a bunch of fancy ingredients on top of the burger. Like some very simple toppings are good, but once you start putting like four or five different things on top, then it kind of just becomes like a stunt burger, which looks good in a photo maybe, but no one really wants to eat that all the time, or at least I don't.
Yeah, like a burger for the gram, you know?
Yeah, for the gram, yeah. Which is totally a thing. There are places that, you know, even their lighting is set up in such a way to make the social media pictures look better, which you can't fault because that's just the way it is now. But, you know, I went there and not everything at this place is great, but, you know, like they actually do use really good meat and they grill it in a way that's fascinating. So when it's on the grill, they actually baste it with butter, which I don't think I've ever heard of that before. But so the butter drips down onto the grate and then into the fire and then like the smoke comes up. So each bite has a really smoky flavor to it. It's really interesting. But I mean, in the review, I talked about like I just would order a burger and then take off all the toppings so I could appreciate the beef. And so, yeah, I thought it was an interesting place to go, you know, but it's not a great restaurant by any means.
I'm going to stop it eventually just because I'm always walking past it. I'm just curious. Another review, Armitage Ale House. And just looking at a few photos of the interior of the restaurant, I'm like, I need to go there because it just looks like an awesome interior. But what are your thoughts on Armitage Ale House?
This was really interesting because I walked in. I mean, I kind of am in love with this space. Like, I think it's one of the best rooms that you can go eat at in Chicago. Up there with the Cherry Circle Room inside the Chicago Athletic Association. It's so beautiful, and every square inch of it has been considered. And so the bar is just beautiful, but then if you go into the back room, it looks like you've stumbled into like a Hollywood movie set with just all these dim lighting, and there's a fireplace. So it's like this beautiful place to go to. And then the drinks are really good because it's a Brendan Sodikoff restaurant. So he has the Hog Salt restaurant group. So they make really good cocktails. But I found the menu to be really, really up and down. So they have these pot pies, which sounds so like not on trend right now, but they're excellent pot pies with a really flaky crust. So it's sort of considers itself to be sort of a London pub kind of atmosphere and menu. And the pot pies are excellent, but I found some of the other dishes to just be like kind of way off base. And so with the review, I was trying to like get at that feeling of like you just love to be in a restaurant space sometimes. And even if the food's not as great as it could be, sometimes you'll put up with a few things just to be there. And so I feel like that's sort of where Armitage Ale House is. You know, and it's a new restaurant, so maybe it'll kind of get kind of iron over some kinks. But if you love spaces, if you love being in, like, dim rooms with lots of people, then that's definitely a place to check out.
It looks very cool. I need to check that place out. It is Chicago Restaurant Week is underway, and it's a great way to head to restaurants you might not go to regularly because you can get really good deals at really good restaurants. Where are a few spots, Nick, that you would recommend people check out during Chicago Restaurant Week?
Yeah, no, Chicago Restaurant Week's great. You need to get on these restaurants because all the reservations are going to go pretty quickly, especially for some of the ones that I'm looking forward to. So, like, one big one is, like, Dear Margaret, which is one of the most exciting openings from last year. They have a $55 prefix menu that they are sort of like a Midwestern French-Canadian restaurant, so very, like, filling food with French accents. It's just a beautiful space, too. But it's also great to use this as a time to maybe try different cuisines that you haven't done. So Demera Ethiopian Restaurant, Ethiopian food is not something I have a whole lot of experience with, but that's what makes living in Chicago so exciting, is because you can experience completely different cuisines that are made from people who live there. So, you know, you can go there for $25 and get a coursed out meal for lunch, or go for $39 for dinner. And then there's also this place called Coco Chili Restaurant, and it's an Afro-Caribbean soul project that's on the west side. And so last year, because of the pandemic, a lot of restaurants allowed you to do the Chicago Restaurant Week as takeout. And so this is one of those places that allows you to get, like, you know, gumbo and Jamaican jerk chicken and salmon with mango salsa in a to-go fashion. So you don't even have to, you can eat it at home and still do Restaurant Week.
I love it. It's a great time. I highly recommend anybody, if you're, as Nick said, you can go try new places you probably haven't been, or different cuisines. Before we let you go, the Oscars are Sunday, and Mike and I came up with the idea of having a little fun with a segment is food in film. And there are so many memorable scenes in movies that just stick out to, I think, just about everybody, whether it was a slice of pizza or a whole meal or whatever it may have been. And we'll get to Mike's got a whole detailed list here.
okay.
But what are a few scenes, yeah, or moments? Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, so what is this, a scene that comes to mind for you? And our twist on this is that we want to recommend restaurants to get your fix after you've seen this scene.
Ooh.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so if there's what movie or scene comes to mind first when you think of that?
Okay, so I got the classic one that I always think of is in Goodfellas, when they're in prison and then they're making, like, a pasta sauce.
Yeah.
And so they're, all these gangsters are in prison, and for, you know, because they have so many connections, they're getting, like, just incredible, like, sausages and all the food that they would ever need. Like, so they're not really in prison, if you think about it.
Oh, it's like a getaway for them.
That's where Paulie introduced everyone to the razor thin, the razor on the piece of garlic, right? And you put that in the sauce,
yeah,
and it melts right into it. I'm sure plenty of people have done that at home after watching that scene.
And, you know, it's a Martin Scorsese film, so, like, you can see the garlic, like, cook, and it's just so beautiful. It makes you just want to go to, like, a classic Red Sox joint in Chicago and eat a whole bunch of pasta. You know, one place that just opened that's sort of along that lines is Olivita, which is in the West Loop. It's sort of a new restaurant, but it has a lot of classic Italian-American dishes, and that would be a place to go get your fix if that's what you're into.
Oh, I like it. That's a great call right there.
Any other ones stick out for you, Nick?
So there's this movie called Phantom Thread.
Yes.
Which
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Paul Thomas Anderson. And essentially what happens is the female lead is trying to poison Daniel Day-Lewis's character. There's a lot going on in this movie, but she cooks mushrooms in, like, just a whole bunch of butter, and it's just one of the most beautiful cooking scenes I've ever seen. And it's done in this way that even though Daniel Day-Lewis kind of knows he's being poisoned, he enjoys it. It's a very strange scene, but it's so beautifully shot because it's Paul Thomas Anderson that I always think of that. And then, of course, I love Ratatouille with all the rats cooking. That's great, too.
Great call. Great call there. You know, one of the more recent movies that I've found has an amazing food scene is, I don't know if you've seen the new Harley Quinn movie, Birds of Prey. And she, the beginning of the movie, she picks up a breakfast sandwich, and it becomes an ode to a breakfast sandwich, basically. Barry White playing in the background and everything. And it turns into a chase scene with this breakfast sandwich trying to basically make it through, you know, avoiding mobsters and everything. So I'm thinking of breakfast sandwiches that make me, you know, want to get out of bed and also protect at all costs. So, you know, I used to live in North Center, and down the street in Damon was Bang Bang Pie and Biscuits. I know the Ravenswood location isn't open anymore, but I believe the Logan Square one is. So that's one for a good fix. I also was a big fan of, when I lived in the city, Chicago Bagel Authority, where you could just get anything on a bagel there. Kevin, any?
Oh, yeah, the steamed bagel. Yeah,
oh, yes.
For sure.
Nick, I think you did a whole write-up on bagels, didn't you? Was that you?
I did.
I remember reading. Nick had a great rundown of some of the great bagels in Chicago. What were some of your favorite spots, Nick?
So Mindy's Bakery. So Mindy Siegel, who had that restaurant, Hot Chocolate.
Oh, I love that place, yeah.
And she's one of our best pastry chefs in the city. She kind of realized she wanted to step back from doing like a full-time restaurant and really focus on baking. And her bagels are just outrageous. They're so good. And you can tell they're good because on the outside of the bagel, you'll notice all these little sort of puff marks. And that's from the proofing of the dough. And so you boil the bagel, then you let it rest, and then you bake it. And so it's this really dark brown bagel with all these little spots on it from the, like, incredible proofing that she does. And so I've never had a bagel in Chicago that good, and I would put that bagel up against any bagel in New York, too.
We'd also be remiss if we didn't mention The Godfather when talking about food in film. Of course, the famous pasta sauce scene with Al Pacino in the kitchen. And
With Clemenza,
and you stuff the sausage in there, a little bit of wine, you fry the garlic in some oil as well. All the, you know, the Italian, the mob movies always seem to feature just great spreads where, like, I could just sit down with some family and friends and just crush a huge Italian dinner right now.
Yeah, isn't that interesting that my mind went to sort of the Italian movie, like the Italian-American movies as well, because it's such a big part of, like, everybody's, like, they're all part of the family, I guess, and so they want the food is a main draw.
I have to throw another one your way. The Big Night, or Big Night with Stanley Tucci and, why can't I think of the top of my head? Monk.
Oh, where they
Monk.
Make the thing.
They make the thing, right? You know what I'm talking
thing?
About. Which is basically a loaf of pasta and meat and cheese.
The Tapano, right?
Tapano, yes.
That's right, yeah.
Tony Shalhoub, thank you. I was gonna like bang my head against the microphone until I figured that out. But Kevin hadn't seen the movie before, so I sent him a clip to check, and the guy who finally tries it, this is like this last-ditch effort to save their restaurant, and he tries it, and he says, "I'm going to kill you. This is so good." Have you found a Tapano in Chicago? I need to know.
Oh, years ago, there was one restaurant that did it as a special, but it's such a, like, elaborate dish that, you know, no one has it, like, just on the regular menu, I don't believe. But now you have me thinking I need to go look for this somewhere.
I watched the scene. I'm like, I need to try that. Last movie, too, Mike mentioned this earlier, Chef, which I'm sure you've seen. It's a great, just, like, kind of fun, mostly feel-good movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was Jon Favreau just wanted to do something fun with his friends.
It kind of feels that way, but it totally comes off on the screen, and he makes some grilled cheese. He's always cooking for his son. They start the food truck. It's just a great, I highly recommend it. It's just a fun movie, and if you love food, that factors in as well.
Yeah, watching him make the grilled cheese in that movie, yes. You're right. It's like, and then he takes the butter and like actually puts it on the specific part of the bread he wants to get crisper.
Yes.
So you realize like how much butter is going into this very simple dish. And then the kid tries it and goes, "Oh, that's good." And
yeah. Like
that's goes, normal.
I think he says like, "Yeah, I know I made it," or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Or the Cuban sandwiches that they put so much attention to detail in, and it's like a montage with Leguizamo.
So good.
Which okay. I have to say, if you love Cuban sandwiches, this is an underrated one, but the one at Guaranteed Rate Field over on the South Side, highly underrated on a good day. Sometimes they're not so great, but the pro move there yeah. is to pick up the bacon on a stick at one stand, bring it all the way over to the other side of the field to put on your Cuban sandwich. Just saying, if you're ever at a Sox game.
Well, at one time I did eat all of the food at the Sox Stadium and at Wrigley too. To compare the two offerings. So that was like 4 or 5 years ago, so I can't.
I remember that piece. That was pretty. That was fun to go through.
Yeah, no, the Guaranteed Rate actually came out on top because they have, yeah, like the Cuban sandwiches and the, what is it, the Polish sausages?
Oh, yeah. Yes. There's nothing that beats the Polish with onions.
Well, now they have the mega kielbasa. I don't know if you've seen that thing, but it's like inappropriate when you take a picture of it.
They've got burgers.
Okay. Yeah.
They've got everything. Nick.
Sounds amazing.
Nick, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Be sure to check out Nick's reviews in the Chicago Tribune. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram. Great follow. Nick, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you jumping on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Anytime.
Oh, thanks so much, Nick.
All right, and that was episode 3 of Chicago's Very Own Eats. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to Nick Kindlesberger for jumping on. Thank you to Ernie Scanton for his help producing the podcast. Coming up next week, it's this time of year where people, and I keep seeing more and more of it on social media, people are dusting off the grill, they're cleaning things up outside.
Including me.
Including you. It's the grilling season. It's barbecue season. That's just about back. I know we're not completely clear of spring, but people are itching to get on the deck, the patio, get the grill fired up. So you and I were like, let's do barbecue next week.
Yes.
And we're going to get somebody on. We're still working on that. Green Street Smoked Meats is probably my favorite barbecue spot in the city. We have places like Smoke. What are a couple of your spots?
Well, Green Street is also one of my absolute favorites.
And it's a cool vibe in there. Dim lid. You can get some Lone Star beer.
You know, and also, even though there's like a big line, you never feel that line is very long.
It moves.
Either. It moves quick. They have plenty of food. I will actually throw it out to the suburbs. Real Urban Barbecue mm-hmm. is where I first got into burnt ends.
Okay.
And I will probably just wax poetics on that next week when we get into this. But I order burnt ends everywhere now because of that place.
I love it. We're going to dive into that next week. Appreciate you tuning in to the podcast. Follow Mike on Twitter at Mike_Piff03. I'm at KPowell720. And thanks again for tuning in. This is Chicago's Very Own Eats.